Let's get started. Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Adriana Maldonado. I am a postdoc here at the University of Constance and the Max Planck Institute. I work with Demian Farin, who's the main lecturer in this class. And I mostly work with social behavior and population slash group dynamics. Right now, I'm working specifically in extrapermating strategies and how are those related to social strategies and the individual variation in these social strategies in zebra finches, which are a cute bird that I will show you later on. So today we will be talking about mating systems. Feel free to stop me and ask me questions if something is not clear or if I have to raise my voice or anything. The other point is that I will be asking you questions and I will be asking you to interact with me during this lecture. So I just encourage you to be open, try to participate, don't be shy. There is no wrong or correct answer here. Just try to engage it, okay? You're sitting far behind. That means that I will have to like walk all the way there and maybe walk back, which kind of interesting, but let's see how it works. Okay, so for today, we're going to be basically going through 4 points. We're going to be basically talking about the main definition of mating systems, then a little bit of the factors that determine these mating systems. Then we're going to go through the most common mating systems, the categories. And finally, we're going to talk about some evolutionary hypotheses about how are these mating systems evolve. Okay, so mating systems. Mating systems are a pattern of association, right? Between adults that are reproductively active. And basically, it will be based on the number of mates of the opposite sex and the paternal or taking care of the young in this pair. Basically, the take-home message from this slide is that mating systems are a pattern of association between males and females, adults that are actively reproductive in a population, right? You will take into account the number of females and the number of males in that population. And you will also take into account the behavior of parental care, okay? There are 4 main categories of mating systems here. The first one, you may know about it a lot, probably, is monogamy. You know, there is one male, one female. They go together, they stay together during their whole life, ideally, or during a breeding season. You can change partner from breeding season to breeding season, but monogamy implies that you will stay with your partner during a certain amount of time through which you are breeding. The second one is polygamy. Polygamy only implies that either the female or the males mate with more than one individual, right? So in this case, if we talk about polygyny, right, this part of the word gyny implies females. So basically saying a male that can mate with multiple females. The contrary goes for polyandry, andry meaning multiple males. In this case, we have a mating system where a female can mate with multiple males. And then we have promiscuity, which I bet you have heard a lot about as well. So in this case, there is just multiple matings of females and males in the population. But why do you think we have such a variation in mating systems? What do you think that are ecological factors that we should take into account or that are determining this type of categories or this type of mating systems? Can you think about one? Okay, that's a very good point. So basically, one idea is that everything is about paternal care. Who's taking care of the young, right? if both parents are involved in taking care of the young, so the young is successfully raised, then they should go into this category, right? Breeding and raising a young requires the effort of both parents. That's correct, yes. There is something there that is like, it's not just about paternal care. But that's a good point. What else can we add into this? Okay, well, I can translate that a bit. So the implication here is about how easy it is to find mates, right? So if you're monogamous, basically you have your partner and you don't have to look for another one, right? Okay, that's a good idea, yes. It has to do with something that it's a little bit more, it's bigger than just, I know this is my partner and I don't need to look for more. So we're talking about a broader concept that is mate availability, right? You have more individuals in your population and you can choose from them, from that pool and say, okay, I will just take this one. But how is that dispersal of individuals within the landscape affecting the decision of going for a monogamous type of system or some sort of polygamy or promiscuous one? That's a very good point. So, mate availability, and we combine that with the fact that if we have a huge dispersion of individuals in the landscape, right, it will be harder to find or to protect or to monopolize more, let's say, females if you are a male, right? It will be harder to just like go through a large patch of habitat and try to just make sure that your female is not engaging in any type of mating with other male, right? But if all the females, let's say, are clustered in a single or in a very small area, then I can monopolize them all, and then that can lead to some sort of polygyny, right? But if you go one step back, how or what is affecting that females or males are dispersed randomly or broadly through the landscape? Or why the females are clustered in a single spot? Good point, perfect. So basically, the food distribution or nesting distribution or any sort of resource that females are using for their survival and reproduction, it's also determining or affecting the distribution of females throughout the space, and therefore the distribution of males as well, right? So it's sort of a cascade there where we have ecological factors that deal with food, nest, breeding material, where to hide from predators, where to sleep, and then it goes to how females are distributed based on that, and then how many females can a male protect or monopolize. So here's a little bit of that. This sort of pathway for ecological factors that are affecting the mating system was proposed in 2011 by Klug. And here we have different factors that are affecting different steps towards whatever mating system we have. So things like female life history, do you know what it means? It's basically everything about females, how they live. It's how many individuals they reproduce, they breed per every breeding attempt. So if I have 5 kids every time I reproduce, or I have 1 kid, if I reproduce once every year, or I can reproduce any time throughout the year, right? If I have to wait until I am 10 years old in order to be actively mature, or I can just breed right after I'm born, those are all life history traits, right? And the ones we talk about that are more easily grabbed, probably, the availability of resources, the distribution of these resources, right? On the other hand, we have the male life history. And then these all will basically interact and will create temporal and spatial distribution of resources of either females or males. And this will change something or affect something that you already know about, that is the adult operational sex ratio. Have you heard about it already? I think you do, right? So you may be able to tell me what is that. Yes, perfect. So the ratio of males to females that are available for mating in a population at a certain point of time, right? Perfect. And that basically would affect mate availability, right? You already know that. It will basically modify the pressure of sexual selection and therefore will also modify mating systems. So here we have, this is a very old hypothesis on how ecological factors are affecting the evolution of mating systems, and we already build it up. So here, if we have an even distribution of females, right? They're like all spread out, then males probably can only monopolize one female at a time. Whereas if females are patchily distributed, then most likely a male can monopolize multiple females at the same time. And just keep this in mind, this is assuming that females are some sort of resource that males can monopolize, right? Just so you keep that in mind. Females can also monopolize males. Those are not that common, but it happens. Here we have the operational sex ratio, right? One male, one female, then there is one male that is basically monopolizing three females, and then another male can only monopolize one female. And then in this population, we have even sex ratio, right? But what would affect the operational sex ratio is the availability of females or males that are able to reproduce. So in this case, if they are all available, the operational sex ratio is equal, right? And they will all have equal opportunities to mate only based on their reproductive availability. And then other factors such as dominance, how big are you, your strategy, that will come into play, and then that will affect how many of these females a male can get. Okay, so some question up until this point? Any questions? No? Okay. So we're gonna go through all these mating systems one at a time. As we're going, I will explain you some hypotheses of why we think this mating system took place. So the first one is monogamy. The main characteristic is that this is a single breeding female and a single breeding male, right? They usually share a territory. They're usually associated with some sort of pair bond, right? So they have kind of a relationship, let's say. It's very common in birds, like 90% of birds are said to be monogamous. Not as common in mammals, but still we find some monogamy, like in these gibbons here. And as you were saying, they have biparental care, right? Good. But to be monogamous, right, you should come up with some sort of strategies to make sure that monogamy works, right? It's like you can decide whether to be monogamous or not, but sometimes it might be harder and you need to reinforce that strategy. And these are three of them, right? Okay, I will ask each of you, to explain each of these ones. So who wants to give it a try? They are basically self-explanatory, but who wants to do male enforced? Yeah, it's basically like coercing the female to stay with you, right? It's, I'm not allowing you to be with any other partner or around any other male, right? This is one example, the clown shrimp, right? And so what would be male, female enforced? But as you mentioned it, it sounds like some sort of mate guarding if you find your mate and you try to keep the other ones away, right? So when you try to keep the other ones away, then that's a mate guarding strategy. You are basically deterring the other potential opponents away from your already mate female, right? In the case of female enforced, right, the one way in which you can achieve that is by suppressing the reproduction of all the other females in your group. That way, the male can only mate with you, right? To change the operational sex ratio by suppression, and then there is only one female available. And the males will have to fight for her, maybe. But, so that's female enforced and mate guarding. We already know we need to basically scare the other potential opponents away from my female or from my male as well. So I told you that about 90% of the bird species are meant to be monogamous, right? That's not quite true, just so you know. But this is a very, very monogamous species. So one of the examples where if you say this penguin, the Magellanic penguin, it's monogamous, you can say it like with certainty. Yes, it is. They are faithful to their partner for their whole life. They rarely engage in any extra pair mating, rarely divorce or change partner from breeding season to breeding season. So this is one of the quite exceptions of nature. But monogamy usually is associated with probably a loss in reproductive success, especially for males. Why do you think that would happen? Why do you think that a male that is only with one female can lose reproductive success, right? That's the perfect answer, right? If you only mate with one female, right? That female, let's say, if we were birds, we could produce probably 6 eggs at a time, right? And then that will be all your reproductive success, 6 eggs. What would happen if I have more females? Well, you have more offspring, right? Then you have 3 females, and each female will produce, on average, 6 eggs, and then you have 18 offspring, right? So truly, that's why truly monogamy, it's not quite common in nature. So we have mating strategies within the mating systems that allows either player of this game, right, female or male, to increase the reproductive success. So this strategy is basically extra pair mating. Extra pair mating increases the reproductive success of males. That has been shown already. For females, the story is a little bit different. There is no consensus. We don't know yet what's going on with females. Yes, it may increase the reproductive success, but so far the evidence is not condoned. It's not strong enough. And there is also some hypothesis that says that it might be maladaptive. So it's not really good that a female goes into an extra pair mating strategy. but they still do. So why? Why would a female do that if that might hurt her reproductive success? That is a question that is still out there, and it's one of the questions that I'm trying to answer as well. So maybe it's about the social environment, right? It's about how many opportunities you have, and then you just take the risk, and that it's what it's playing out there. So how do we know? How do we know that a male or a female engage in an extra pair mating or in an extra pair copulation? What kind of techniques? Yes. You need a test. Which kind of test? Paternity. Yes. So, you know, genetics right now, it's like on the top of all the technology and everything. So we just run a microsatellite analysis. We run a paternity analysis, and then boom, you know which ones are your kids and which ones are not. So social monogamy, we're going to define that. It's basically a living arrangement, right? It is basically a social behavior. I will be taking care of the offspring with you. We live in sort of the same area, same territory, or same nest, right? There is a pair bond, there is a relationship between the individuals. It does not necessarily translate into genetic monogamy, right? Genetic monogamy implies that there is exclusive parentage. So all the offspring from that pair belong to that pair. And that's it. So just keep those two in mind. Socially monogamous species are not necessarily genetically monogamous, right? Okay. So we're going to try to explain under which conditions a female will engage in extra pair copulations, and use this graph to make a prediction on when or under which conditions a female will engage in extra pair copulations. Here you have on the y-axis the quality of the female, some sort of intrinsic quality, body size or body fat, right? And environmental quality. So that's basically, we could think about food availability, food resources. And then on the x-axis, sorry, or way around, female fitness, right? Reproductive success. So, and then you have one line that is representing the relationship between quality and fitness when the female is on her own, and then the solid line that represents the relationship between quality and fitness when the female has help of a male. Do you want to share a little bit of your discussion back there? Yes. Right, so I'm just going to make a summary. So basically, everything we have said so far is that we divided the environmental or female quality axis into four different, let's say, chunks. In environmental quality A, right, the environment is really poor. We have really poor conditions. The female needs the help of the male in order to get any sort of fitness, right? So she depends on the male. That's what it's saying there. Then we have a better quality here, but still, she doesn't do as well without the male. With the male help, she does better. That means that she still needs the male, right? So I think up to this point, if I need a male, it doesn't really pay off to try to go and seek for an extra pair mating, right? Or an extra pair mate. Let's try to link those things together. Okay, so here I need the female needs the male up to this point. Now we move into environment C. In environment C, it's I can do it with or without you, basically, right? I can raise chicks without too much of your help, and I will still do it good. When we move into D, the environmental quality is just very good. So she doesn't need as much help raising the offspring, right? She can do it very well on her own. So here, the dependence of the female on the male, it's not there anymore, right? She doesn't depend on the male anymore. So indeed, I mean, probably his help, it's just making it harder for her to achieve that fitness level, right? So if we think about what we said, parental care and quality of or availability of resources, right? I don't need the two parents here to be able to have a high fitness. Would that be a good opportunity to go and seek out for an extra permit as opposed to here where I really need, like, the two of us need to be here in order to be able to raise the chicks or the offspring in general? What do you think? Very good. That's the reasoning behind it. So basically, under these two scenarios, right, where environmental quality or female quality is so good that she can do it on her own, or if the male helps, it doesn't really affect her, right? That's where she would be willing to go out and seek for an extra pair mate. And most likely, she will do that if that will increase her reproductive success even more, right? Now, there was a question here on why this help of the male is detrimental to the female fitness, right? So even though it's not the real point of the graph or the hypothesis, there might be a reason why. And it's, if the quality of the environment is good enough, the male can also go and seek for extra pair copulations. And that means that he's also not really contributing to parental care as much as he used to do before, where the two of them needed to be there in order to raise kids, in order to raise offspring. So that could be one reason. There might be other ones behind it, right? But these are assumptions based on the studies that people have done before where they have measured the success of females with or without help. And in this case, the main assumption, right, is that in really bad environments, females always need the help of a male to gain reproductive success, which is quite an assumption there, right? But it goes along like history traits and things like that. Okay, so is it clear up until this point? Why or when, not why, but when a female could engage in extra pair mating? Is it clear? Okay. So basically, okay, one female can go and engage in extra pair mating, right? But we also have the case in which one male can mate with different females, and that's called polygyny, right? Usually when there is polygyny, there is a lot of male-male competition. So a male, the strongest male, will have access to the female, the resource. And this strategy, as we already said, it depends on how females are distributed in space and how well they can defend the females. And so there are different strategies for this polygyny system. You can basically go for a female defensive strategy, right? And then we have this nice here amphipod, where basically this guy glues all the houses, all the females on top of him, and just walk around with them. That's good, right? I mean, might be successful doing that. Require a lot of energy to carry all those females on top of him. But polygyny system, right? Then there is another strategy where the male can, instead of defend the female itself, will defend the resources that the females are using. So this is the example of the black-winged damselfly. So the male basically, as I stayed here, defend all the vegetations that the females are using, and therefore he's basically kind of controlling and patrolling over the females that are on that patch of resources. Then we have scramble competition. This is even more interesting. So in this case, we can talk about the wood frogs. The males basically are on the pond, the adult reproductively active males are on the pond, waiting for the females to come, and then they just like try to get as many females as they can. You know, it's like when you go to a kid's party and then there is this surprise thing and then all the kids like have to go and jump and try to get as many toys as they can. I don't know if that's a thing here in Germany, it is in my country. So it's basically everyone tries to get as many as they can, right? It's the first one who get it, and then you keep going and going, and that's like, there is no way you can monopolize things. You just have to just keep doing. There is no way I say, this is mine, you can use it. Just keep fighting or competing for females. And this strategy is quite interesting. And it's kind of like when you go to a party, somehow. Especially in these days that the females and males dance on like different areas of the room. So in this case, the males aggregate and they start doing some sort of display on a patch of ground. And like this, the black grouse is one of the beautiful examples of it. They do these dancings and like displays, and then the females are like sitting a little bit higher most of the times. And they look at them, and then they just kind of like choose which ones they want to mate. So it's basically a male-male competition, right? It's basically the one who gets the best display, who does better, the one who's going to get most of the copulations. And it's been shown. The one that does better in these arenas, he's the one that gets most of the copulations, or most of the females. It's quite nice, this one. But then we have to start thinking again. Why do we want, or why females will accept to be the second one in a relationship, right? Why do you want to accept to be in a polygynous relationship? Why females want to be in a polygynous relationship? So here, we have this hypothesis. It's called the polygyny threshold. Do you know what a threshold is? Okay, good. So in this case, right, we're gonna take into account again territory quality and female reproductive success. We have two lines. We have one line, there is the monogamous, right? This is the relationship between territory and fitness for females when she is engaged in a monogamous relationship. And then we have the second line that represents the relationship between territory and fitness for the female when she engaged in a polygynous relationship, right? So based on this, again, we can discuss that in your little groups. When a female would opt to be in a polygynous group instead of staying in a monogamous relationship, what would be that threshold where she decides, this is a better strategy for me than this? So when is polygynous a better strategy than being monogamous? Okay, one explanation would be why I decide to go into the polygyny system. It's because basically it's a group benefit, right? If I'm in a group, then I can safely raise the offspring, right? Because of the benefits of the group size, then reduce predation risk. and maybe I have some helpers in the group, right? Okay, that's a good answer. How do we link that to this? You got to think about also, if you stay with a group, right, the larger the group is, what happens with competition and access for to resources, right? Yes, so that's a trade-off there, right? You basically join a group, you have the benefits of many eyes or this or that one, but also your competition is stronger, right? Access to resources is stronger. So that's a trade-off you need to evaluate there. But coming back to this one, yes? Perfect. So here we have a very good explanation. I'm gonna try to put it in the same words as you did. So if we take into account territory quality, right? And we have this poor territory, or this male that it doesn't offer too much, and then we have this territory A, right, where there is a lot of quality or food resource available, the male does very good, right? If a female can choose whether to stay in monogamous relationship or to engage in polygyny, then basically that would depend on how much she would gain based on the territory quality as compared to how much she would lose if she stays in monogamy, right? In territory A, right, this is how much it would pay off if you join a male that has already a female. Is that correct? So you gain this amount of fitness. But your options are either to join a male B in a monogamous relationship, or you join a male A that has a better territory. Which one you would decide to go for? So as your classmate was saying, I don't know your name yet. You will go for the male that offers you better quality, right? Even though under the same quality, if you would be able to find a male that has no other female, then you would get better benefits, right? But you're paying off a cost of being the second one in that group, the second female, but you still will do better than if you stay in a monogamous relationship, right? So that difference in territory quality against the cost is what makes you go or shift your decision from going from monogamous to polygynous. So in this case, if one female mates with multiple males, right, she engaged, then it's going to be polyandry, right? In this case, we have female-female competition, and usually very common in birds, not very common in mammals. Then we have sort of the same threshold hypothesis to explain polyandry. And if you look at it carefully, maybe later on, you can also identify under which cases a female will engage in polyandry and when not, right? So this one is for you, like a take-home homework kind of thing. But what I want you to think about now that we know that males can engage in multiple mating and females can also have multiple males, right? What are the costs of multiple mating? Is there any cost? Or is it all about benefits? And I only increase my fitness if I mate with multiple individuals. Very good. So that's a very huge cost, right? You need to look for your partner. You need to invest energy in that display in order to get that mate, right? What could be another cost of multiple mating? It happens the same in animals. Sexually transmitted diseases, that's a huge cost for animals. Do you think it's weird? When there is a disease, basically you are out of the game, right? So you're losing fitness because you first have to get better in order to keep playing the game. And that's basically what happens with sexually transmitted diseases. You're basically not able to go and play the game with the other males. So you cannot really get more females, or the other way around, right? And then, basically, there is another one that can happen. If there is a lot to do with parental care, what would happen if probably I get caught up cheating? If the male or the female discovers that you engage in extrapyramidal mating, then what would happen? Very good. So we have three costs there, right? One cost is the energy you're putting on into trying to find and getting that female or that male. The other cost is about getting any type of disease. And the third cost is about probably if they discover, right, then they stop helping you with parental care and therefore your fitness can decrease, right? But with that, there are also some benefits of mating with multiple individuals of the opposite sex. Some of them, there are two big categories. Some of them are characterized as genetic and some others as material or direct effects. Some of these you have already heard about, hopefully. So let's talk about, for example, the genetic insurance hypothesis, right? So basically, a female that mates with multiple males can reduce the chance that one of her eggs is not fertilized. That's basically the insurance hypothesis. You know, there is not all the sperm is able to go and fertilize an egg. So you just mate with multiple males, and then by chance, one of these sperms is going to fertilize your eggs. There is also the good genes hypothesis. So basically, if my partner probably has a low genetic quality, I might look for an extra sperm copulation with a male that offers better quality, and therefore I get those good genes. That's a hypothesis. It doesn't work all the time, but it's there. Then it could be compatibility. And you know that not every DNA is compatible with each other, right? So basically you can mate with multiple males, and then could be that you increase the compatibility of the sperm and the egg. Then in terms of material, I'm just gonna go through one. Basically, if you mate with more males, then you have more resources for you, right? They are all helping you with your offspring, even if it's not 100%, because not all the males are helping 100% of the time, but you get that help, right? Also the resources that the males are gathering from their own as well. This one, the infanticide reduction hypothesis, is a very interesting one that I just want you to have a look at it whenever you have a chance. And maybe we'll talk about it in a bit. So I was saying that when males want to mate multiple females and females want to mate multiple males, right? There is a conflict between sexes. So it sort of creates this tension of like, I need to increase my fitness somehow, and I'm implementing or I'm taking these strategies to do so. And then it's been proposed that that led to another mating system that is really rare in nature, and it's polygyandry. So basically, both males and females mate with multiple individuals of the opposite sex. It's a very nice example in the European bedroom. And it's, as it said, it's really, really rare. And it's called polygyandry because the social pair behaves as a social pair. They do have a pair bonding in there, right? As opposed to promiscuity. In promiscuity, there is also multiple mating with the opposite sex, right? But in this case, these matings, they don't require any sort of social pair bond. So good examples, chimpanzees, I bet you've heard about that behavior in chimpanzees, and greater sage grouse. So basically, it's kind of like an indiscriminate sexual relationship with other individuals in the group or in the population, right? It also has cost. We already talked about it. One of the biggest costs of promiscuity is sexually transmitted diseases, more than parental care, because in this type of systems, usually the male and the female don't have such a pair bond that implies biparental care. So why do we have promiscuous systems? Two reasons why is that could be to avoid sexual harassment. Do you know what is sexual harassment? It's like a forced copulation, basically. The female doesn't want, but the male basically forces her to copulate with him. So in this case, basically, what happens, as in chimpanzees, the female basically mates with one and other, and that reduces sexual tension, right? Males also solicit the copulations from the females. And then there is this other one that can't be out, right, of the table. Good genes or a sperm competition, right? If you mate with multiple males, then you can also get the benefit of mating with males of good quality, which means basically that you will get good gene quality, right? And that promotes a sperm competition that might favor the genes or the sperm that has good genes. So that's another explanation to this. What I really want to make emphasis on here now, that we have talked about all these systems, is that even though they describe them as categories, they are flexible. The same population can express different mating systems depending on the geographical distribution, the condition of the environment, and these strategies can even vary within the populations. So individuals in the same population can express different strategies, can try to engage in extrapair copulations, can just play monogamous or so. And one of the nice examples where you can see basically a great diversity of these mating systems is the Dunok. They express 3 out of 4 mating systems in a single population. It's quite striking. So to kind of wrap up and think about this in evolutionary terms, right? Because we want to be able to put this into an evolutionary perspective when you think why this happens. How come this still exists in nature? Then we can think about how did monogamy evolve, right? So we did talk about resource distribution, right? Female distribution, ability of males to control the females. So based on this, and this graph here, what would you think is the hypothesis that Lucas and Klutenbrock proposed in this paper? Yes, okay, very good. So basically the hypothesis says that evolutionarily speaking, the ancestral condition, right, what goes first in evolutionary time is that females were solitary. They were intolerant to each other, so they are more spread around, right? They roam. But then as the females start competing against each other, right? And that creates more, it creates lower female densities, then that leads or open the room for social monogamy here, right? That's one of the hypotheses. And in this case, right, what this paper also proposes is that biparental care, it's a product of this and not the reason to be monogamous. That's an alternative explanation there, but it's very recent. They also explained this based on the distribution of females, based on the type of resources they are relying on, right? So basically, they said that monogamous species are characterized by using resources that are quite spread or on over space, right? So socially monogamous species will use mostly fruit, whereas, and very low, and very few of them, of these species, will use food that has very low nutritional value, which basically means that individuals will have, or females will have to roam more or move more throughout the space, making it more difficult to really monopolize that female resource. Whereas in solitary species, right, they rely more on this low quality food. They roam more around, they travel more around the landscape, throughout the landscape. And that makes it a little harder for males to just monopolize a single female. Okay, so there is another hypothesis here to explain why do individuals will engage in multiple male mating, right? And it's called the paternity uncertainty hypothesis. So as I was explaining when we were talking about the promiscuous system, basically, one way or one reason why you mate with multiple males is to sort of kind of hide or create confusion about who is the real father of your offspring, right? And that confusion basically creates uncertainty from the male's perspective, and every male basically feels that the offspring is theirs, and therefore they take care of that offspring, right? So that's a paternity uncertainty hypothesis, but it goes, it basically proposes that sort of polygyny is like the ancestral state, right? So one male with multiple females, but then because of this, that is infanticide, right? In order to sort of reduce infanticide, that pressure led to the evolution of promiscuous systems. So if I create this uncertainty about who's the father by mating with multiple males, the males won't engage in infanticide, won't kill the offspring that is not their offspring, right? And then basically they propose a transition from promiscuity to monogamy based on parental care. So in this case, it's kind of the other way around, where parental care, it's kind of like the cause that leads to monogamy. And not as I showed you before, where parental care, it's a byproduct or a consequence of monogamy. And here, monogamy basically led to strategies like mate guarding. And that, it's true. So this was proposed in 2004 by Wolf and McDonald. And this is basically it. So far, we saw five different types of mating systems, right? What I want you to keep in mind is that they are flexible, right? That's the last one in this slide, but for me, is the first one. just remember that things are not like fixed in nature, right? You can change the strategies based on the constraints and the benefits that you are getting. And that male mating systems, right? If we look at mating systems from the perspective of the male, as I did basically throughout the lecture today, they basically evolve in response to the female spatial distribution. So how these females are distributed throughout space, and ecological factors such as food, nest, place to sleep, or place to hide from predators, and how they determine the spatial distribution of the females, right? Okay, so that's it. Thanks for coming.